Welcome back to this football show on today's rendition of In the Jar. Let's get it popping, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I was thinking to myself, I got to change to a new song on the sound pad. But you know what's great is that I forgot. And the intro to this song is actually very good to intro a show. And so even though I didn't expect this to be what's playing, even though I didn't go in and change it, I'm happy that it's playing. I'm grateful to be here. Grateful for this show. Make sure you like the video. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. We got a lot of good stuff coming down the pipe for you today on this wacky Wednesday. And now the lyrics are coming, so I can't talk on it anymore. So we'll get that going so that we can continue our magnificent intro. It is November 12th, 2025, years after our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. You guys got to wash your muffler, get the oil changed, grab your ball sack, and let's get rolling. We got some football to talk about, a little bit of football, you know. A lot of college today. We find that Wednesdays are the college football days to talk about college ball and take a look at what's going on. We always update our college football playoff picture. And today, we go over some scenarios that might be nightmarish for certain conferences, namely the ACC. Miami ranked number 15th, according to my sources, in the newest rendition of the college football playoff rankings, bumped up three spots from last week, but they still need a lot of help to climb up to that 10th spot for an at-large bid. Duke is a team that seemed middle of the pack to most. I think they beat Clemson recently. They are a team that could potentially win the ACC championship at 8-4. How is this possible? Duke could potentially win the ACC championship at 8-4 and not make the top five conference championship rankings. Current automatic spots. Top five highest ranked conference champs get playoff spots, not guaranteed for the Power Four. And I do believe that the commissioner of the SEC, what's his name, Greg Sankey? There's another guy that was commissioner that I knew for a long time that died. Mike Slive, is that his name? But anyway, Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, he comes out and he says that the SEC would be in favor of eliminating at-large bids completely in the college football playoff picture. Wonder why? Wonder why the deepest conference in the land wants to do away with at-large bids? The conference with the deepest pockets wants to do away with at-large bids? I wonder why. That'd be pretty cool. As an SEC-biased guy right here, I love that, because then you just let all the SEC teams in. It's good to go. You get the best teams in the playoff every year. No problem. Yeah, we got to let this team in. We got to let Duke in, even though they're 8-4, because they won an ACC conference title. They managed to squeak in the playoff because they won a formerly powerful conference that now seems to be really weak. Hello to everybody in the chat. Aubrey Burke. Hello, Aubrey. Lion 6326 underscore 16. Shout out. And so we're looking here, and sometimes my outlines, they make sense. Sometimes they don't make sense, but we continue to roll regardless of if they make sense. But this could be a nightmare scenario for the ACC where no teams from this conference get into the playoff. That's what I'm reading here. ACC's oxygen entirely dependent on Miami holding an at-large bid or getting lucky in an at-large scenario. So is the ACC actually going to miss the college football playoff entirely? What if we told you in July that Miami's playoff hopes come down to four other ranked teams losing? It's not a good spot. It's not a good spot where your team hadn't played well enough to be in control of its own destiny, and you need other teams to lose. Miami, the best team in the ACC this season, is on the outside looking in for the remainder of the season going into this college football playoff, a team that 3 or 4 weeks ago everybody expected to be in the conversation on behalf of the ACC in the college football playoff, and now they're on the outside looking in. They lose a game to SMU that they shouldn't lose. They lose a game to Louisville that was really, really tough for them to swallow. Carson Beck just cannot seem to take care of the goddamn football. The guy doesn't look to be the most intelligent fella. I don't want to burn bridges here, but the Sid the Sloth jokes, Sid the Sloth from Ice Age, if you don't know, looks a lot like Carson Beck. I don't know what it is about Carson Beck, but, you know, I don't want to say bad things about people on here. Look, I've never played at that level. I don't know what that's like to play quarterback at a level, but he hasn't played at a satisfactory level. Let's just be real. Throughout the entirety of his career, he's been on great teams, and what has he won any championships? No. Will he? Probably not. And another thing I'm sitting here thinking about on this wacky Wednesday is that the committee chair of the college football playoff, Mac Rhodes is his name, acknowledged yesterday that the committee knows that Georgia Tech got a bad call that handed them a win against Wake Forest. So this opens up a can of worms that I'm pretty concerned about in regards to college football playoff. Last year, I thought the college football playoff committee did a terrible job. I get that it's the first couple years. Last year was the first year with the expanded format in the college football playoff. So you have to give a little bit of a leash there, okay? But I still thought, with context, that the college football playoff committee did a horrendous job picking the playoff last year. There were teams that should have been in, like Ole Miss. And I'm trying to remember last season, but it's not really clicking for me in my brain last year. But one team I remember knowing should have made the college football playoff last year was Ole Miss, and they didn't. And we had a lot of snoozer games in the first round of that college football playoff. A lot of games in the first round of that playoff last year, and a lot of games in the second round of that playoff last year, if I remember correctly, that aren't ever going to be worth remembering. What are we doing this for? We're trying to create great matchups. We're trying to create fanfare. We're trying to create hype and memories around this great game that we call college football. And I don't think the committee did a great job last year. Now, in the second year, you've got a shorter leash. I'd love to know exactly who is on this committee. We shouldn't have many women on the committee. I'm sorry, but you didn't play the game. I can't expect you to watch film and understand these teams that are in question if you have never played the game. If you have never been even on a practice squad, even on a scout team in a Division I program, I can't justify it. But again, we got all these woke ideologies hanging around. Well, we've got to have a lot of representation on our committee. For what? So that you can virtue signal? For what? I want to have the best teams play the best games in this goddamn playoff. So if you're going to sit here and make decisions as a committee, I don't even know why the committee chair came out and said this about the Georgia Tech bad call. We're factoring this in. So you're going to count that as a loss? How does that work? What discussions is that starting? Committee is, the hell is that word? The committee is stating wins that were losses due to officiating. This is a big, big concern coming out of the college football, coming out of me talking about the college football playoff committee. If we really want to go there, Auburn could claim similar treatment if we're reopening officiating grievances. You know what I'm saying? It's a dangerous precedent for this playoff committee if we're starting to talk about hypotheticals in terms of letting teams into the playoff or grading a team's performance and whether or not they should get into the playoff or not. We're talking about officiating hypotheticals with Georgia Tech. The committee is aware that Georgia Tech was given a call against Wake Forest. What are we doing? I struggle to believe that whatever governing bodies over college football these days, I don't know if the NCAA's got a lick of power anymore. And the NCAA's obviously an inept, crooked, corrupt, backwards organization itself. And a lot of this seems to be bleeding into decisions made by the College Football Playoff Committee as well. What are we talking about? This shouldn't even be a consideration, let alone something that the chair of the playoff committee goes to the media and talks about. We are aware that Georgia Tech was given a bad call against Wake Forest. They won the game. Simple as that. Are we going to treat that like a loss? It's absolutely ridiculous. So should a playoff committee ever consider what would have happened? This is a hot take, tangent trigger. Should a playoff committee ever consider what would have happened if the ref hadn't blown it? No. And again, I have AI create an outline for me every single day, and I have it generate hot takes or tangent triggers around each segment, each topic that we touch on. And so sometimes these hot takes, I will endorse them. Other times, I will condemn them to hell where they belong because they're such terrible takes. This isn't really a take as much as a rhetorical question. Hell no, a playoff committee should never consider what would have happened. Is that rooted in reality? No, it is not. Reality is the final score. Reality is the film. Not judgment calls made by the officials. The officials, if they're doing their job, In a perfect world in a football game, I acknowledge that there's no perfect world, and I also acknowledge that we're talking about a hypothetical around a hypothetical right now. But in a perfect world, if you're an official, people watching the game forget that you're there. If you're an official, you are doing your job well if fans don't remember you being there. If we're going to do this for Georgia Tech, do we redo the 2023 Iron Bowl? 2021, Georgia, Alabama, you guys remember that one? Do we redo that? It's absolutely ridiculous. And it just, I think it shows a bit of incompetence, which I suspected after seeing the playoff committee's picks last year. I'm saying, man, I know we're still growing as a show. I know this probably won't reach the right people to make the change that I'm about to propose, but put me on the fucking committee. put me on the playoff committee. I'll set everybody straight. I'll fire all the women that never played the game that don't deserve a spot on the committee. I'll fire all the diversity hires, and I'll make sure that it's only gritty football guys in that war room deciding which teams get to make the playoff. And there's going to be cussing. There's going to be threats. There's going to be heated discussion, because that's what the fans of college football deserve on their playoff committee. Not some diversity hire. I've watched football for 2 years, and I'm here on the committee as a black woman. Get the fuck going, bro. I'm serious, man. I hope YouTube doesn't ban me for this. But it's pissing me off. Because I have a feeling that we're going to get another botched playoff field this season, because we have diversity hires on the college football playoff committee, because the governing bodies around college football are so ass backwards and prioritizing the wrong things that they can't even get their own playoff right. We're talking about a hypothetical with Georgia Tech. We're talking about a call that a ref made in evaluating Georgia Tech's performance. I talked about what should be looked at if you're on the college football playoff committee last week. And it's clear that these asshats are not looking at those things. In fact, they're looking at the exact wrong things. Absolutely ridiculous. So there's my rant there. At what point does the committee become the woulda, coulda, shoulda committee instead of judging what actually happened? That's a great question. Another rhetorical question created by the artificial intelligence on my outline for the show here today. But we'll read it again. At what point does the committee become the woulda, coulda, shoulda committee instead of judging what actually happened? This is what I'm talking about. This is a problem. I don't know who's in charge of appointing college football playoff committee members, but I guarantee you whoever it is probably has head in ass. We got to get head out of ass. We got to get this right. And I will play devil's advocate for a minute and say that no matter how good the college football playoff committee is, there's going to be some people who will be unhappy with how it goes down. Right? So we just got to be real there. What are we doing, college football playoff committee? What are we doing? Georgia Tech gets a call that we don't think was the right call, so we're going to factor that into our decision going forward. Are you kidding me? I think that's all I have to say on that. Texas Tech. What's the deal with Texas Tech? I heard some glowing reviews about Lubbock, Texas. Hello, Wyatt Browning. I heard some glowing reviews about Lubbock, Texas, how it's like a Texas high school football town, at least except it's the volume's turned up. They beat the hell out of BYU, and they are currently ranked sixth. They can still climb to the fifth seed if they win their remaining games and they win the Big 12 championship in Dallas, presumably a matchup against BYU, a rematch of the team they just beat the shit out of. So, Texas Tech, do they have a case to sneak into the top four if they run the table and if they beat BYU in the conference title game? Do I think that Texas Tech belongs up there with Texas A&M, Indiana, Ohio State? Absolutely not. They got that stud linebacker. What's his name? Josh Rodriguez. That guy's living the life that I always wished I could. Strong mustache. Great linebacker. And now people are talking about him as a potential Heisman candidate. Look, I haven't watched much film on Texas Tech. I shouldn't confidently say that Texas Tech doesn't belong with a program like Texas A&M, but they don't. Come on. Let's be real. Do they belong with Bama? No. Do they belong with Ole Miss? No. Do they belong with... Maybe they belong with Vandy. Right, but realistically, let's take a look. Like, if Texas Tech was in the SEC, how many losses do you give them? I'd say at least 4 or 5. And at that point, we're looking at not even sniffing the playoff. But now we're, you know, I don't know. I'm not hating. I think Texas Tech's done a great job. They've obviously invested a lot of money into their football program. Apparently, they've invested a ton into their football program, according to people. The facilities are top-notch, apparently. The game day experience is top-notch. I'd love to go catch a game in Lubbock, Texas. I'm going to get to catch a game in College Station, Texas, weekend after this one. My alma mater is playing the Aggies, and me and the gang were headed down to College Station to go check that out, hang out on the sideline. I am scared for my Samford Bulldogs. My Samford Bulldogs are 1-9. Playing in the Southern Conference, going to get themselves an apparentment with the number 3 team in the land. It's going to be scary, but we're going to make sure that it's a good time here. Okay, hot debate point. Hot takes. Could Texas Tech actually crack the top 4? Probably too spicy, but worth testing. Worth taking a look. They're playing good football. They just beat the hell out of BYU. Can they beat them again? Will BYU come back and be able to game plan for them? That'll be interesting to see. We got, let's see, make sure I didn't miss anything. Oh, this is a juicy one. If Texas Tech wins out and beats BYU in Arlington, have they earned it over a one-loss SEC team? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Wyatt Browning asks, is your canal good? I'm not sure what you need to expand, brother. I'm not sure what you're asking, but I appreciate Wyatt being in here, engaging with the stream. Make sure that you hit that subscribe button, brother. I got a piece of hair in my mouth. Okay. Still there. Are we serious or are we? Golly. Pisses me off. Loose hair. You guys hate loose hair like I hate loose hair. Yeah, I think my Wyatt, I appreciate you asking. I think we got the best, fastest growing football community in the land. If you're in here, you probably like football. And if you like football, you're going to love our channel. So hit that subscribe button. Hit the like button, bare minimum for me there. We are live on this football podcast every weekday, Monday through Friday, around 6-ish Eastern. So hit that subscribe button. We got Madden streams on the channel as well, daily clips. And you can find us on audio platforms, Instagram, TikTok, everywhere. You look, you see in the jar with me, Dupe. Okay, Texas at Georgia. And we got some good things in the works. We're looking to get some fellas on the show. Look at that. That means I'm working, boys. Ugh. You guys remember Benchwarmers where he shows him his nips because he got him destroyed from all the titty twisters getting bullied when he was a kid? And he goes, ugh. Ugh. Wyatt, appreciate the sub, brother. Yeah, my pits are going crazy right now. That means we're working on this work boot Wednesday. You heard me? You hear me? Okay, we got Texas at Georgia this weekend. This is college football week 12, by the way, if you didn't catch that already. Massive resume building opportunity for Texas. Texas has been pretty bad on the road in 2025. They lose to Ohio State to open the season. They lost to Florida. They barely beat Kentucky. That was an ugly, ugly game. And Kentucky is a struggling college football program. And then they barely beat Mississippi State. So a lot of stinkers on the road for Texas. this season. And they go on the road to Athens to play the mighty Georgia Bulldogs, who have been stellar, to understate it, at home. Their only home loss in 30-something games at home has come to Alabama this season. Nearly perfect has been Georgia at home. Both quarterbacks could elevate this game. If you asked me preseason in a quarterback battle between Arch Manning and Gunnar Stockton, who prevails in that battle? What do you think the vast majority of folks would have said preseason? Same here. Arch Manning. Not the case anymore. See, we've all seen it, that there's flaws in Arch Manning's play. And I would, in fact, at this point, easily take Gunnar Stockton over Arch Manning if we're looking at a quarterback for our SEC football team. The weather will be fine, apparently, in Athens, upper 60s at kickoff. I know that I've been hearing from some people back in Lexington, Kentucky, that they've been having some 20-degree, 25-degree days the last couple days, but it's going to be up to 70 there by this weekend. So I would imagine that weather is affecting, if that's even a word, across the SEC. And nonetheless, we're going to have upper 60s at kickoff in Athens, so temperature will not be a factor in that game. Critical factor for me in this game, tackling and space. And yak, that's yards after catch. Look, Gunnar Stockton and Arch Manning, both are top two in the SEC, respectively, for pass attempts behind the line of scrimmage. If the game comes down to QB play, again, I'm giving the edge to Gunnar Stockton here. I don't think Texas really has much of a chance at all to win this, to be quite frank. And really, in a lot of ways, if you're looking at the college football playoff picture, Texas would effectively be eliminated from the discussion, to me, if they go on the road in Athens and lose this game. It's a very tall task for Texas. And you look at Sarkisian versus Smart. That's another, I mean, Sark, say what you want about Sark. Think he's done a fine job with Texas. Have they fully adjusted to SEC play? That is up for questioning. Especially when you look at how Texas's team has performed on the road in the SEC this year. They really have not had an SEC game where you're like on the road where you're like, oh, they played really well. So there's something that maybe Sark could be doing better on that front in terms of, and maybe it's not a him thing, it might be something for the players to figure out. So let's look at our hot takes for this segment. Texas, is this finally, Texas got humbled, or they've been getting humbled on the road in the SEC. Is this finally their moment, or is it just going to be another humbling? I think it's going to be another humbling. I really think we saw A&M come over to the SEC years ago. We saw Missouri come over to the SEC years ago. That's when the conference realignment stuff really started happening, early 2010s from what I remember. Texas A&M comes over. Mizzou comes over. And now in the recent years, you have Oklahoma come over. Texas coming over. And I definitely believe that it takes a program a couple of years to acclimate to the gauntlet that is the SEC. The SEC. I think it'll be another humbling for Texas. I mean, imagine if we told you in July this game comes down to Arch Manning versus Gunnar Stockton. Like, who would you say wins? Preseason, everybody's saying Arch. Now, I feel like if you're a real ball knower, you're taking Gunnar Stockton. His play's been elevated all year. He's been playing great football for the most part. Has Gunnar Stockton all year. Yeah. That's all I've got to say on that game. We got Alabama versus Oklahoma. Again, you'd be hard-pressed to tell me that Bama doesn't win that game. I don't know if there's much more to talk about than that. And you got a dumpster fire going on at LSU. Brian Kelly is in a court battle right now with Louisiana State University over the $54 million buyout. Would these people shut up while I'm podcasting here? Thank you. Brian Kelly's in court with LSU right now. LSU's haggling with him over this $54 million buyout. The issue is that the loose lips about litigation is killing their recruiting. Coaching candidates are watching this disaster unfold and staying away from LSU with a 10-foot pole. No coach is going to take this coaching job seriously over at LSU until the court litigation is settled. Nobody's going to touch that job with a 10-foot pole. No legitimate candidate will bite until LSU gets their affairs in order. At first, they needed a president. Then they got rid of their AD. They needed AD. Now you're looking at putting a search committee together for interviews, but all your focus, all your energy is going towards this Brian Kelly court case. I read somewhere that LSU claims that they didn't even really fire Brian Kelly. And so therefore they're not due to pay him his buyout. There's no precedent here. We've never seen this in college football before. And I think it just goes to show how much the game of college football is changing before our eyes, really. It's a messy, messy vibe with LSU right now. Candidates are sprinting in the other direction right now. It's like the hot girl in class. You know, everybody looks at her, they want to be with her, and then she opens her mouth and says three sentences, and you can't get away from her fast enough because she's so crazy. You know what I mean? Got some Auburn discussion here. John Sumrall doing a great job over at Tulane, being mentioned for a lot of big coaching jobs. Auburn now one of them. And I have no clue how Lane Kiffin to Florida or Lane Kiffin to LSU is still even a discussion. He's staying at Ole Miss, guys. We have to accept that. Lane Kiffin is not going to leave Ole Miss for any job other than Bama. We have to accept this. We know that Lane Kiffin's got family ties to Florida. We know that court cases and messiness aside, that LSU is a very attractive job. But Lane Kiffin's made a home for himself in Oxford. Lane Kiffin can do at Ole Miss exactly what he would be able to do at Florida or LSU. That's not always been the case. But we find ourselves in a different game where I think that the playing field has leveled out between programs like Ole Miss and LSU and Florida. What's the situation over at Arkansas? Must wait and hope their guy doesn't get stolen by Auburn. Now, objectively, is Auburn a better job than Arkansas? Ooh. That's a bit of a debate now. We'd have to know the specifics on what kind of money they've got access to. And really, that's where the conversation starts. It's like salary cap in the NFL. If you got more or less salary cap, you can put together a better or a worse team. It's pretty simple. But when you get into these discussions, it turns out, I would imagine, I've never been in a room chatting with college athletics executives and head coaches before, but I would imagine that it looks simple on the surface, But you get into the brass tacks and it's not so simple. All right. Notre Dame at Pitt, don't care. I do know that Pittsburgh's head coach was asked if this game against Notre Dame was a must win, and he said no. To me, that's a bad way to answer a question. No, this is not a must win. If you're a head coach, wouldn't your response maybe be every game is a must win? Every game we treat the same. I think that's the best mentality as a head coach. Every game's the same. Another week, another faceless opponent. You know what I mean? I thought that was kind of weird that he said that. Iowa at USC, do not care. Travis Hunter is done for the year. We'll pivot over to NFL here. Travis Hunter is done for the year. And I think this guy's a bust. I'm sorry. I don't mean to throw stones. I don't mean to burn any bridges. But the idea that a guy could come into the NFL and play both ways is absolutely delusional to me. Some people are saying about Travis Hunter that his playing both ways has covered up deficiencies in his game on either side of the ball. I don't really see that. I feel like, if anything, as a two-way player, your deficiencies on either side of the ball with your game would be highlighted. But we just haven't seen that much of Travis Hunter this year as a rookie in Jacksonville. He struggled with injuries, and now we find he's done for the season. Some people are saying that he needed the opportunity to chase this dream of being a two-way player. I mean, come on. We're talking about semantics at that point. We're really talking about stuff that doesn't really matter. Like, if you got a guy that loves ball, you got a guy that loves ball. You know? The hot take or the question here is, being a great football player different from being a great position player? Now that might be the question of the day. And we'll get into other stuff here soon. I know I titled the episode Jair Alexander, heading out of pro football, mental health break, all that stuff. We'll get into that. Is being a great football player different from being a great position player? I think being a great position player falls under being a great football player. So it's almost like the waves in the ocean. The ocean can exist without the waves, but the waves cannot exist without the ocean. I don't think a great football player exists without first being great at your position. Now, are there things about being a great football player outside of being a great position player? I think so. Your instincts, your playmaking ability, these things all go into a different unseen realm, I believe. Your sixth sense as a ball player, if you will. It's an interesting debate to think about. I'm not sure if I have much more on it at this point. But I think being a great football player starts with being great at your position. But being a great football player encompasses maybe more than just being great at your position. So yes, being a great football player is different from being a great position player. Okay. That's it for the Travis Hunter. We got news yesterday that a formerly great player, defensive back Jair Alexander, who was recently traded to Philadelphia, has stepped away from football. I heard this at my Pop Warner team's practice last night from another coach, that Jair Alexander stepped away. And for a split second, I was shocked about this. But then after that millisecond passed, I wasn't shocked. Because you look at the way this guy's career has gone the last couple of years. Constantly hurt. And I know that certain guys, a lot of guys, it wears on him being hurt all the time. Mentally, spiritually, obviously physically. It wears on him. We saw it with Andrew Luck. And he's saying things about mental health, stuff like that. We'll go into Twitter here. And we will see what people are saying about this. Jair Alexander. My arm has been... Anyway. Jair Alexander. God damn. Every time I move that thing, it's screaming. What are people saying about this? Contemplating retirement, informed the Eagles he's stepping away to focus on getting right physically and mentally. Interesting. Some Eagles fans are coming to his defense. The Eagles have placed Jair Alexander on the reserve/retired list, so that must be different than injured reserve. And Philly traded for Alexander from Baltimore before the trade deadline, but he never played. That's all I'm getting here. That's very interesting. He was a great player. I remember when my Samford Bulldogs, we played against Louisville my freshman year. Jair Alexander is my age. And Jair Alexander was the punt returner against us. And he was a great player. He's very shifty. He's obviously had a good career. He played some great football with Green Bay. And now contemplating retirement. I hope he makes it back. I hope everything is okay in his world. Sometimes the pressure of this profession, now I can't speak from experience. I've never been a professional football player, but I do know it's a high-pressure profession with a lot of factors and variables in it that you cannot control. So hopefully Jair Alexander is able to get right, come back and play some good football. His best football might be behind him, but who knows? Maybe this break will do him justice. I know a lot of Philly fans are pissed off, but then I see some here on Twitter coming to his defense. So that's interesting. We had so much to talk about yesterday, and I feel like we didn't have the time, and now it seems like a lot of those things that were hot topics yesterday are no longer hot topics. But in terms of the Bengals, I know you guys know I had to make this about my Bengals. In terms of the Bengals, we see today, Wednesday, that Joe Flacco did not practice. Joe Burrow just came back to practice yesterday in a limited capacity. And a lot of Bengals fans were very excited about that. Do I think that it has really any macro effect on the season for Cincinnati? Yes and no. You know, we talked about this yesterday, but it's like we're already hanging 40 on people and losing. So what do you think is going to happen when Burrow comes back? We hang 70 on people now? You know what I mean? Like it's kind of a moot point. But you look at the AFC North, it's wide open. You got pretty much all your division games ahead of you. Cincinnati goes into Pittsburgh week 11 this week. Guys like Big Ben Roethlisberger are weighing in on it, saying that Pittsburgh beats Cincinnati by 15+. Pittsburgh is playing a bit better, but then they get buzzsawed by the Chargers on Sunday night. It's pro football, man. Division games, literally anything can happen. And I know that as terrible as this Bengals team has been, that they're 2-0 in the division. I'm not trying to instill hope. I'm not trying to do that. But You cannot mathematically rule this team out yet. As terrible as they've been, one of the worst, probably the worst defense in NFL history this front office has put together for Cincinnati. Defensive coordinator was obviously not the problem. It's just, it's very crazy to me. What else? I'm saying, man, Wednesdays on this show are always fun. They're challenging in a fun way. Because the NFL headlines have died out a little bit. We're still midway through the week in terms of new stuff going on with games. So it's always kind of a fun little challenge. I find myself running dry right now. Excuse me. Yeah, I mean, more about this Jaire Alexander. Let's see if we can get some more details here. Philadelphia got him from Baltimore. They dealt a sixth rounder in 26 and a seventh rounder in 27. Never played a snap for the Eagles. And I don't think there's really any stipulations about Jaire Alexander or any trade in particular that gives the team that dealt the picks, in this case Philly, the right to get those picks back. I think they're just gone. Let's say Jaire Alexander never plays again. Those picks are just gone to the wind. That kind of sucks. You know what I mean? And some Philly fans I saw were pissed about that. Stepping away, using mental health as an exit strategy, the new norm. It says dangerous take, but fodder for discussion. I mean, shit, man. Like, what? I don't know. If somebody's stepping away due to mental health reasons, like, I don't know, man. It's a tough business, I imagine. I've been on the business side of it. I've never been a player with all those expectations and pressure. You know, I've been in jobs with expectations and pressure, but nothing that public yet. You know what I mean? It says here, you sign for millions, get traded, then say you need to contemplate. Really? I mean, I don't know. Everybody's situation is different. Everybody's got different suffering. I understand that. Yeah, I don't have a ton more today, guys. It's a wacky Wednesday. It's always a challenge pulling something together midweek because all the major headlines have kind of died out. All the activity has kind of come to a standstill until we have Thursday night football each week. So appreciate you guys hanging with us on this wacky Wednesday. We might come back and do a Madden stream later. I always feel like I oversell that, overpromise that, and then we haven't done a good job of getting on lately. But I do mean that. I love the Madden streams. I feel like it taps into a different audience, and I really enjoy doing those. So maybe when we come back from jiu-jitsu, I'm getting ready to leave for jiu-jitsu here in about 9 minutes, or better yet, wrestling practice it is on Wednesdays. So gonna go knock that out real quick, but maybe when I come back, we'll hop on a Madden stream, have a little fun, and that's the show today. That's where we're gonna end it today. I've run dry. I'm gonna be quite frank, and when I run dry, there's two directions we could take it. I could keep bullshitting. I could keep trying to make stuff out of thin air, which is basically what this whole show is, outline aside. Or I could just cut you guys loose, and it's pretty convenient to cut you loose when we're here at about 50 minutes here on Wacky Wednesday. So hope you guys enjoyed. Hope you guys got some value out of it. Smash that subscribe button if you're not subbed already. Smash that like button either way, and we will get on down the road. Really appreciate you guys. Really love you guys. Each and every day, we're here Monday through Friday. Access us on all audio platforms. That's updated daily. Access the replays of each episode on YouTube, Kick, Twitch. Subscribe to the channel so you don't miss them. We go live every day, Monday through Friday, on this football podcast around 6 Eastern. So we'll leave you guys there. Appreciate it. Love you. Holler at you tomorrow.